You are listening to Podski Wee Wee, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
Over the middle, caught Saunders, Jalen Saunders, touchdown.
Harris to the end zone.
Mazzoli chased down, end zone, touchdown, Luke Tasker. Into tight traffic, this looks like it's picked, it is picked by Richard Leonard. On second down, Mazzoli looks for Banks in deep, and Banks makes the catch, touchdown. Beats two Ottawa defenders of the football, Pruno and Rowe. And Banks has his second touchdown catch of the game.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Oh, Mike, what a surprise. Is my calendar wrong? It's not 2018 yet. And here we are doing a podcast because there's just so much that's gone on since the last time you and I sat down to record. I feel like we had to do one. You're in agreement, right?
Absolutely. You know, we expected this offseason to be a busy one, and it's off to a very, very quick start.
Yeah, we sat down, what was it, 2 weeks ago, I think, and said, hey, that's it. We're done for the year. And bam, we're right back in before Christmas even hits because the QB carousel is moving. The coaching carousel is moving. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to start with the news because that's all we got now. There's no more games, so we're talking all news. We're hitting Ticat land first, and obviously the big thing is, Mike, we got one of our Christmas wishes fulfilled. June Jones is officially back for the 2018 season. The Ticats made it official on December 4th, signing Jones to a three-year deal. We could sit here and I think talk about how we feel, what this means, but I feel like we've covered all that stuff before. So I think we can both just kind of say we're happy Jones is back. We look forward to seeing what he could do with a full offseason to implement his vision for this team, right?
Yes, absolutely. They, like we talked about before, they absolutely turned it around when June Jones got hired. And to get a full training camp with his system, maybe he adds more to the playbook. It should be interesting to see how they start off next season with him as head coach.
I am curious, however, how they're going to tackle the voluntary mini camps that the Ticats have run. The Ticats under Ken Austin used to use those to evaluate players to bring to main camp a month later. I wonder if the Ticats will go with the more traditional route of bringing the veterans in, kind of installing an offense and installing a game plan. Because it's the first year under a new regime, I'm very curious how that's going to pan out. But I don't think we really need to sit around and discuss how we feel about Jones coming back. We've made that clear. We wanted him back. We're happy he's back. And the big news that kind of came out of all this re-signing of June Jones wasn't him coming back, but what he said about a certain Johnny Manziel. And this just exploded over the past week. First, he compared him to Warren Moon, and that really seemed to piss people off. But then he went on The Waggle, the podcast of the CFL hosts, and I'm just going to say exactly what he said, and we'll go from there. His direct quote is, "I think he," meaning Johnny Manziel, "would be the best player to play up here." Uh-oh, probably shouldn't have said that, should he?
No, I think he put a lot of pressure on a lot of different people, including himself, with that statement. Now, he says that now there's extra pressure on Manziel if he comes in. There's extra pressure on him because, you know, he set the bar so high for this quarterback to come in. And then you look at the other quarterbacks that are, I mean, Mazzoli's going to be a free agent, so he's technically not under contract right now. Or he is for like a month or two more. Caleros sees that statement. You know, it's just not a great thing to say, not a smart thing to say. But if he actually believes that there is potential for Manziel to be one of the best, if not the best quarterback in the CFL, then I'm not mad at him for saying what he feels, you know? So overall, I think it was a dumb statement. But if he really feels that way, then I can't hate him for it.
Yeah, I think people look at it because it's coming from June Jones, and I think they look at him and see him as kind of an outsider for lack of a better term, when it comes to CFL. He has less than 2 years of coaching experience and 1 year as a player in the league. And aside from the 10 games he coached the Ticats, all the CFL experience came from over 30 years ago. So he's kind of a newbie to the league. And I feel like people hear this from a quote unquote outsider and they kind of feel like it's an ignorant statement. He doesn't understand the league. Doesn't understand that. I don't entirely agree with that. I think I'm kind of with you on this. And maybe if we weren't talking about the Ticats, maybe we would react differently. I don't think Johnny Manziel will come up here and be the best player to ever play in the CFL. But if June Jones does, why should he couch his opinion and why shouldn't he say what he feels? You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're trying to sell – maybe he's trying to sell Manziel and coming up here. I don't – like, there could be a whole host of reasons why June Jones made these comments. And the one thing I've heard about Jones since he became up here and heard about him in the past is – he's a player's coach. Players love this guy. He defends them to the death. He gives them all the credit. Like there's something about him that players enjoy, and it's things like this because he does pump the tires of the guys that are on his roster. And if Johnny Manziel is going to play in the CFL, it really does look like he's going to play with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And like I said, I don't agree with him, but I don't feel like he should be chastised for having an opinion just because it's not the commonly held belief. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And but if we just look at Johnny Manziel's career in college, I was watching one of his highlight reel tapes the other night, and this guy was phenomenal at Texas A&M. And you look at his skill set, and you think about the CFL, and it does match up. For like, the guy can scramble. The guy has a strong arm. He does have all the tools to be really successful in the CFL, but that doesn't necessarily, as we know, it doesn't necessarily translate into success because there's been a lot of quarterbacks, you know, Heisman Trophy winners, really big stars in the NCAA that come up here and don't succeed at all. So it all comes back to which I've said this before: is Manziel really taking this seriously? If he signs a contract and comes up here, if he takes it seriously, if he's got his life together off the field now. I don't have a problem with what players do off the field. They can party it up as long as, you know, there's not a serious problem there. You know, if he goes out, has some drinks, I don't care. Like back in the day, I heard that Danny Mac used to drink beer like no one else. And he'd come on the field and he'd win games for the Ticats. So I think that Johnny Manziel can be a big success on paper. He could be a big success in the CFL, but we're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
Well, and that's where I come from both sides of this debate, the June Jones side and then essentially the everyone else side. Jones says he would be the best player to ever play up here, and everyone just attacked him for that. And
you know, if he changed one word in that sentence, he could, you know what I'm saying?
And it's to me, it's funny because all those people saying there's no way Johnny Manziel will ever be the best player to ever play in the CFL, there's a ton of irony in that statement because you can't definitively state that he won't be the best player to ever play up here, just in the same way that you shouldn't state that he will be. You know what I mean? Like you just said, we don't know until he actually plays. And I think it's very easy to look at Jones' statement and say he's wrong because the only way Jones gets proven right is if Manziel becomes the greatest player in CFL history. If he becomes the 75th greatest player, the 25th greatest player, or even the second greatest player, he comes up here, plays up here 5 years, wins four MOPs, and is considered the greatest quarterback to ever play up here aside from Doug Flutie, Jones is still technically wrong because he's not the best. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I don't think Johnny Manziel will I need that to be perfectly clear. I do not think Johnny Manziel will be the best player to ever play in the CFL. But until we actually watch him play, shouldn't we just kind of save these opinions until then? Jones is out there saying it, so I understand why it was newsworthy. We're talking about it because of that. Maybe June Jones is going back to his old college days. He's recruiting. His best years were in college coaching. What do college coaches do? They recruit players. They go into the living rooms of these high school kids and sell their families on why you should come play football for me. And I'm sure he's called a lot of players in his time the best player to ever play. You know what I mean? This to me just feels like a recruiting pitch. And until we see Johnny Manziel play some football in the Canadian Football League, I think we should just kind of save all the definitive opinions on what he will be until then.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think he will be the best player either, but I do believe that there's a lot of potential there to play in the CFL with his skill set. So we're just going to have to wait and see.
Wait and see indeed. One player we know is a pretty great player is a member of the Hamilton Tigercats by the name of Richard Leonard. He had an awesome debut season in 2017, and he unfortunately was snubbed, in my estimation, for an all-star selection. He was not selected as a league all-star, and it kind of goes towards, I think, I don't want to say a Western bias because the West Division was obviously a hell of a lot better than East this year, but 23 of 27 all-star starters went to Western players. No Ticats and no Alouettes were selected. Understandably, they were the two worst teams in the CFL. And I don't want to say that this takes anything away from the guys that beat out Leonard for the spot, Calgary's Siante Evans and Winnipeg's Chris Randall, who I both think are great players. But I just feel like Leonard should have made the All-Star team after the season he had. Mike, what do you think?
I'm not sure if he should have or not. Maybe there was a bias because of the losing record on Tiger Cats, and maybe because he's a rookie. I'm not sure. But to be honest, I don't really care about the All-Star selections. I care about our team winning. So to me, enough. I could give a crap about who's on the All-Star team. I know that do you get paid if you make the All-Star team? Like
Guys have bonuses in their contract for making All-Star teams,
right?
Award nominations, stuff like that. I remember years ago an offensive lineman for the Cats signed, and one of the bonuses in his contract was if you win MOP, you get X amount of dollars, and he tweeted out a picture saying there's a chance. And it's like it's ridiculous. An offensive lineman is never going to win MOP, but I guess it's these standard player contracts. They probably have all these award breakdowns and all-star breakdowns for guys to get bonuses. And it would have been a nice little bit of change for Leonard to get if he would have won. I want to talk about veteran bias for a second. I think that kind of plays a role here. And it's nothing against Leonard. I think it's hard for rookies at any position on any team to kind of make these all-star votes, these all-star teams, just because the sad reality is people who vote on these, myself included, might not get a chance to kind of see everyone. You know what I mean? Like it's very hard. We're Ticat fans, so we focus on, hey man, Richard Leonard's having an awesome season. Hey, Ryan Bomben's having an awesome season, because we're invested in that team. But honestly, you ask me if I know who to name the five starters in, say, Saskatchewan's secondary, I might be hard pressed to do it. And I follow the league on a pretty hardcore basis, but. So maybe you look at that all-star ballot and these things are emailed out. Maybe guys are just getting through it quickly. They find the names they know. And the thing is, you look at the all-star team, none of those guys did not deserve to make the team. I think this just speaks to the talent level we have in the league now. And I think it's a good thing where we're talking about guys getting snubbed for the all-star team instead of being like, why did that guy make it? He didn't deserve it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure it's just hard to tell with Richard Leonard's position, DBs, like, is this guy better than Richard Leonard? Did he have a better season? Because sometimes the stats don't tell this whole story. So if you're just looking at the stats on a page, okay, this guy had 5 interceptions, Richard Leonard had 3 or whatever. That's not actual stats, but just for example, they might pick the guy with the better stats, even though Richard Leonard was the better cover guy. So it's hard to tell for a fan like me just watching the games.
Well, yeah, Tommy Campbell's a perfect example. Wasn't named to the West All-Star team, so obviously wasn't named to the league All-Star team, but he was a CFLPA All-Star, and he was a shutdown corner. You don't throw your way. People forget you're there. So you're right. You don't have the gaudy stats. You don't have the numbers, and people aren't – when they're looking at, okay, who do I pick, maybe we'll forget about you. And Leonard did have some good stats. I think he was like second on the team in tackles, or he was up there. He's in the top 5. He did have a bunch of turnovers. Like, he had a good season and he had the numbers, but you're right. Maybe sometimes it's not enough. And it's unfortunate, but if he plays like he played this year, like he plays going forward, he'll make plenty of all-star teams in the future.
Absolutely.
So the Ticats have signed a bunch of players, and sadly, it's not anyone of major importance. At least, you know what? I'll change my voice on that. It's not that these aren't important signings. We're not going to be talking about Jeremiah Mazzoli or Brandon Banks or Luke Tasker is what I mean. The Ticats signed 5 nationals and 6 international players over the past week. These are the national players. These are all Canadians. They signed Everton Williams, who played defensive line at U of T and has been with the Ticats for 3 years, played 9 games last year. They switched him over to the offensive line, so they clearly see some progress in him. We got Braden Schramm, who was a second-round pick last year, only played in 1 game this past year. Kay Okafor was a third-round pick of the Ticats last year. They consider him somewhat of a raw prospect, came to football very late, but again, moved him from defensive line to offensive line, similar to Williams. looking to kind of build that guy up. Jack McEwen, who is the brother of All-Star Argos center Sean McEwen, I guess kind of had a breakout season in his last year at the University of Calgary. So he wasn't drafted, so the Ticats actually put him on the neg list, which is really, really rare for a Canadian player. And the one Canadian player that really interests me, because I heard a lot about him after he was drafted, is receiver Jacob Scarfone. He was drafted in the sixth round by the Ticats last year, spent some time with the team before being released to go back to Guelph. He missed all of 2016 due to an injury, but he became a second-team All-Canadian this year. And I have had a few people tell me that if this kid gets a chance, he could develop into a very, very special player. So these aren't players, these five Canadian guys, they're not home runs. These aren't the big signings, but these are some quality depth guys. And one of the hardest things to do, I think we'll agree, is to find depth Canadians. And the Ticats look like they have five guys here that they really want to develop. And that's a good thing to me.
Yeah, it's always important to get the depth guys signed up early, and that's what they've done. You know, these guys aren't going to be starters next year. At least, I don't think so. You know, crazier things have happened, but we'll see. But, you know, bringing these guys in for depth and for special teams players, which is hugely important in the CFL, is a very good thing. And signing a couple of our draft picks from last year is a really good thing, too. You know, we had the names I recognize are Schramm and Okafor. So hopefully these guys have really bright futures with the Ticats and eventually are starters down the road. The names might not bounce out right now, but a couple years from now, they could be one of your favorite players.
Absolutely. The same goes for these six American players the team signed. Defensive lineman Ryan Mueller, who played in four games last year. He started two games for the Ticats, finished the season with two tackles and a special teams tackle. Quarterback Dane Evans, running back Rajion Neal, linebacker Lucas Waka, and linebacker DJ May all spent time with the Ticats last year on the practice roster, mostly at the end of the season when they expand the practice roster. So these guys all got a taste of what it was like to be with the Ticats, to learn the CFL game. These could be some guys that you see maybe make some noise next year if given an opportunity. These are going to be names to watch in camp, I think, when you think of guys who haven't played, under the radar guys, unknown guys, but they've had the opportunity to learn the game. And I think that's an important aspect here. And the last guy that Ticats brought in was running back Storm Johnson. He's the lone newcomer here. And a lot of people recognize that name. He played some significant time in the NFL over the last 4 years with the three Florida teams, Miami, Tampa Bay, and Jacksonville, and actually started a game for the Jacksonville Jaguars back in 2014, played his university ball at the University of Central Florida. He also played at the University of Miami. He's a guy that I remember years ago when they signed C.J. Gable, and I was like, oh, C.J. Gable, I remember him from USC. Oh, okay. But he was buried on the depth chart behind guys like Siobhan Walker. Avon Coburn, I believe, was – I think he had retired by then, but he was still a name that people were bandying about. And it was like Gable was like fourth or fifth on the running back depth chart, and no one thought he had a chance to really make the team. But then look what he turned into. He's been, what, a five-year CFL starter? He was Ticats Rookie of the Year nominee that year. Like, this guy, I look at Johnson, he's another guy who's like, okay, I remember that name, he's been out of it for a little while, but man, he could be one of those guys that they sign in December and January that we're talking a ton about, but the general population are talking a ton about, that come the start of the season, it's like, there's your starting tailback. Maybe even ahead of a guy like Alex Green. Maybe. I'm not saying for sure, but you bring these guys in for a reason. I think Storm Johnson could be a player up here. I think all these guys could be players up here, but they're depth signings, and I think that's the big thing. One of these guys could be the next Richard Leonard, could be the next Devon Coleman, who were guys we did not talk about last offseason, and look at the seasons they had.
Yeah, and that's the thing about the CFL. You know, players leave to go to the NFL, or they leave within the league, but new players come in every single year, and new stars are born. And what a friggin' name, Storm Johnson. I love that. I love it. Hopefully he lives up to his name, and causes some storms on the fields. Sorry
indeed.
About that.
And yeah, that was pretty bad. But we'll let it go. It's Christmas time, friend. We'll give you that gift of the lame joke.
All right. Thank you.
So last bit of Ticats news before we jump into some league news. Steph Potasek has left the Ticats, or will be leaving the Ticats, and he is going to become the offensive coordinator at the University of British Columbia. This is according to our boy Justin Dunk at Three Down Nation, who broke this story that Potasek had signed a one-year deal to become the OC at UBC, which was a little bit of a surprise. And In Dunk's report, it notes that Potasik had spurned at least one school, which sources told Dunk was unfortunately my beloved University of Toronto Varsity Blues. They were interested in him as their head coach, but he decided to take the UBC job instead. And man, that was a gut punch when I saw that. It kind of ruined my week.
Yeah, it's an interesting decision by him to go back to U Sports football and not be a head coach. I mean, maybe the I don't know how the University of Toronto is doing lately. The
on
last
the,
couple
on,
years
on the
in football,
football field?
On the football field.
Not good.
Like, are they not good?
They're...
So that's a big responsibility. Come in and try to turn around that program. Maybe he just wants to jump in, you know, call the plays for a football team and be successful. And that looks like UBC will be successful the next couple of years.
Well, and he got a bit of a sweetheart deal. He's not going to have to really show up to BC until the start of the season, so he gets a chance to kind of be at home with his family. He's only expected to be there for the duration of the season. UBC is loaded with talent. They have a great quarterback in O'Connor. I can't remember his first name. It's left my mind. But anyway, he's a guy they say has CFL attributes. He went to Penn State and then transferred to UBC when he wasn't getting a shot down there. So this is a kid that can play ball. UBC is a good program. I think they finished second in Canada West last year. I think they lost to Calgary before Calgary went on and lost to Laval. So
yeah, they lost on a last second field goal. I think wasn't that
oh,
the 59
yeah, right.
yarder?
Oh yeah, right. It was like a 59 yard. You're right. You're
yeah,
totally
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yep.
So, like, UBC is a good program, and Potasik knows offense, man. This guy is a good coach, and I know there might be some Ticat fans going, well, what the hell are you talking about? Ticat's offense. The Ticats, his run with the Ticats, I think, whether you view it as a failure, I just don't think that that's fair. I don't think he ever got a chance to sort of put his vision for the offense in place. Mm-hmm. Honestly,
yeah, he was just kind of there, you know.
He was just kind of there. You never really heard about him. Then all you heard about was he was calling plays and he wasn't calling plays. I just feel like it was never a fit. It was one of those things where they found someone, they got someone quickly, and he was local, and it just didn't work out, unfortunately. But I think he's just meant to coach university ball, or maybe this is a stepping stone to getting him back into the CFL somewhere, because he is a heck of a football coach. Like, there's no doubt about that. And man, I still just wish he would have gone to U of T, but I wish him success at UBC, and maybe we'll get some more time to talk about college football. But if it's not on TV, we're not going to get a chance to do that. But anyway, I digress. Well, good for Potasik going there, and I think that could make for some interesting offense out at UBC with a Canadian starting caliber quarterback out there. I think that could be some neat stuff we see.
Yep, all the luck in the world to Mr. Potasik. Like we said many times, he didn't really get a good shot. Maybe the next time, or if there is a next time he's in the CFL, he'll actually get the reins and be able to, you know, actually call an offense for the length of his contract.
We'll see. We'll see. Okay, CFL news time, and we got a lot to talk about here. And we're going to start off with the bombshell that happened earlier today as we record this on Monday evening. James Franklin, Mike, has a new home. And it is in Toronto. The Argos acquired the quarterback from the Edmonton Eskimos along with a 2018 third-round pick for offensive lineman Mason Woods. I mean, Franklin leaving Edmonton isn't really a surprise. Franklin getting traded isn't really that big of a surprise. Him even going to Toronto isn't a huge surprise, but it still was one of those things when it happened, it was like, whoa, was expecting it, wasn't expecting it at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yes, I did. I didn't see the Toronto thing coming. And there's a lot of questions to be answered with this trade, because he's a free agent in February. So the Toronto Argonauts still have to make a deal for him. And we don't know what his thoughts are, you know, if he wants to go try out the NFL, if he only wants to sign a one-year contract. So if things fall apart and he doesn't sign with the Argonauts have given up an offensive lineman with, from what I've read, has a lot of potential. He's a friggin' monster. He's like 6'9". I'm not sure how much he weighs, but I'm sure it's over 300 or close to it.
Yeah, 325, I think.
325. Ooh, see, that's a big boy right there. That's wow. But yeah, there's a lot of work to be done for the Argonauts if they want to bring this guy back or bring him in for a year, 2 years. But if it does all work out, it's a huge get for the Argonauts, because a lot of people have really high hopes for Franklin, and I've seen him play, and the limited time he's been a starter for the Eskimos or come in during a game, and he's looked really, really good. So if this works out for the Argonauts, it could be a huge get. It could be the future quarterback of the Argonauts. But if it doesn't, they could basically get nothing for him except for that third-round draft pick.
Yeah, it's very strange because everyone assumed once the deal was announced, it's like, okay, well, the Argos have probably worked out an extension with him. And then it came out, the Argos haven't talked to him about an extension. Okay, well, if they haven't, at least this probably means Ricky Ray's going to retire. And then Jim Popp came out and said, acquiring Franklin had nothing to do with Ray, which I think is a little bit of BS. Like, I mean, if Ricky Ray was 28 years old and not 38 years old, you know what I mean? Then you're not making a trade for James Franklin. So it absolutely has something to do with Ricky Ray. It has to do with the fact that Ricky Ray is at the tail end of his career. But basically what he's saying is, and Pop even said this himself, he wants Ray back. If Ray wants to come back, he's welcome back. So Franklin also apparently told Brock Sunderland that he was not re-signing in Edmonton unless he was getting given a shot to start. Well, he wasn't going to be given a shot to start in Edmonton because of Mike Riley. He's not going to be given a shot to start. There's not going to be a QB competition between Ricky Ray, who just won the Grey Cup, and James Franklin. So if Ray comes back, will Franklin be able? Will he take sort of the Trevor Harris deal, where he takes less money in year one but signs a 2-year contract, then gets the big jump in year two, and then Ray does the Burris thing and kind of leaves, you know, like retires, and then Franklin gets to assume, like, but then we all also heard that Franklin only wants a 1-year contract and he still wants to try the end. Like, there's so many things to still kind of get settled here. It kind of, like, it starts that whole QB carousel that I think that we were both expecting to happen this offseason, but kind of gets it off to a little bit of a, it's a fast start, but at the same time, kind of a rocky one, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And does it affect Ray's decision at all? You know, he sees they bring in Franklin. Does that change his decision to retire or to come back? You know, Franklin doesn't want to be the backup quarterback anymore. He feels like he's a starting quarterback in this league. And if Ray comes back, I don't think he signs. I just don't think he's going to sit behind Ray for a year. And what if Ray has another great year next year? He might come back for another one. So Franklin has to sit behind him again for another year. So it's almost a case of the CFL not having enough teams for the potential starting quarterback. So maybe if they had one more team, Franklin would be the starter there.
Well, and think of what else this means. Let's just think about us in Hamilton. We have assumed since basically Labor Day that Zach Caleros was out at Hamilton and was going to be going back to Toronto. Well, if Ricky Ray returns, is Zach Caleros going to go back there to be the backup to Ricky Ray again? I don't know. They've acquired James Franklin. If Ray retires and they have Franklin as a starting quarterback, Caleros definitely isn't going to Toronto. That opens up a whole world of possibilities to where Caleros could go now. Maybe that opens up some trade doors for the Ticats to bring him. Or maybe he stays in Hamilton. This is the first domino of this great quarterback carousel of 2018. And do you remember when – I think we've talked about this before, like the mid-90s when it just seemed like these great quarterback, Tracy Hamm, Matt Dunnigan, Danny McManus, Doug Flutie to a certain extent, were all kind of swapping teams, it seemed like, almost every year. And it was just like there all these great quarterbacks going from team to team. It feels like this offseason is going to be one of those where we're going to see a bunch of quarterbacks make moves, and that at the end of the day, you're going to sit here and go, okay, who did we end up – like it's musical chairs almost. Where did we end up with? Who's the girl we're taking to the dance? But there's going to be a lot of movement. This is just the first move, and it has ripple effects on everything else.
Yeah, there's a lot of pretty girls out there to ask to the prom, right? I mean, even a player like Darian Durant, like is he done? Is he going to get another shot somewhere else? Now, I don't think he's going to get a shot as the starter, but maybe a backup. You know, Kevin Glenn, you never know with him. There's a lot of players, quarterbacks in particular, that could be on different teams, could be former starters that are now backups. So this offseason is shaping up, has the potential to be one of the most interesting ones in recent years. And they've been interesting in the last couple of years with the new CBA and the 1-year contracts and all that, but this one looks very, very interesting.
Yeah, this one feels like it's going to be the first one we see some major moves at the key position. We've seen Trevor Harris, Zach Caleros, you mentioned Darian Durant. We've seen guys like that, but this feels like the first year we're going to see a bunch of these quarterback moves where everything could change. This we're in for, I think, a very, very interesting offseason, which is good for us because it gives us stuff to talk about on the show.
Yes, is Trevor Harris a free agent too?
He is indeed.
Wow, see, there's another one. Is he going to resign back in Ottawa? I don't know. It's just, it makes me excited. The off seasons are exciting. Like the regular season when it starts, it's amazing. And, you know, I miss that. But the offseason has a lot of exciting stuff going on in it as well.
Well, it feels like the CFL for a while would have like pockets. Like there'd be all the stuff, like there'd be Grey Cup, and then there'd be all the movement post Grey Cup. Coaches would get hired, fired. You'd see maybe some player movement, but not a ton. Then the CFL would kind of go away for a while. Then free agency would pop up, and we'd get about a week or two of a lot of stuff there. Then it would go away for a while, and then we wouldn't really hear about it again pretty much until probably the start of training camp at the end of May. But now it feels like we're talking CFL ball all the time because there's always something happening. It's become almost a 12-month-a-year league, and that's awesome because it keeps it in the news. And like I said, it's awesome for us because it gives us stuff to talk about when there's no games to actually play.
Yep, and there's pros and cons to it, obviously. The cons would be that there's a lot of player movement and you can't get attached to certain players on your team because they're just going to be gone the next year. But the pro is that there's a lot of movement in the offseason. It makes it really interesting.
For sure, for sure. Speaking of offseason stuff, looks like we're headed, Mike, towards a very ugly, ugly labor fight between the league and the Players Association. As was reported by our boys, which I think is safe to say, Drew Edwards and Justin Dunk, the CFL sent a memo to all 9 teams that essentially says that they should withhold any offseason bonuses due in 2019. And they did this, and this is a direct quote from the CFLPA, to add pressure to the PA and its membership to rush a settlement at the bargaining table. This current CBA expires in May of 2019. This is an aggressive tactic, I think, by the league, but also kind of greasy, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, greasy. I don't like it one bit. I think that they shouldn't be doing these tactics. Like, already they're making friction between the league and the CFLPA. And the CFLPA has a history of backing down when the CBA is up for contract, and they really put the pressure on the players. And they usually, back down because there's not a lot of money going around like in the NFL or the NHL or the 4 major sports leagues. But I'm not sure if they're going to back down this time. I'm just not sure. I know a player who is a leader in the CFLPA, and I was talking to him like, oh, this was probably year and a half ago. And he thinks that there's going to be a strike this time. Now, how legit that is, I don't know. That's just one guy saying that. But it wouldn't surprise me if the players say enough is enough. We want to cut of the pie. And another thing that, the conspiracy theorist in me, there was a report about the Argonauts losing $10 million this year. I'm wondering if they leaked that to the press to say when negotiations come around again, hey, look, yes, Ottawa, Hamilton, most of the Western teams are doing well. But Toronto, they lost $10 million. We can't afford to pay you this much or this much more. So I don't know if there's any, that's just my mind, going places with it. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case.
Wouldn't surprise me either, honestly. Those things get leaked for a reason. And this does kind of feel like we're headed towards a labor stoppage, whether it be a strike or whether it be a lockout. I think it would be a strike because I think the last time this happened, there was no CBA when training camp started. And the players came in and said, "We're going to negotiate in good faith. We're not gonna stop the season. We're gonna show up. We're gonna practice. We're gonna play. We'll get a deal done." And they ended up getting a deal done relatively quickly, but it was for not anywhere near as much as I think people were expecting. I think for the first time, like, we're talking about big TV contracts with TSN. Now they're talking about moving the season up to accommodate a contract with the NFL Network. So we're talking about some money here, and we've got a commissioner that's talking about growing the league 2 to 3 times the size it is now. We're talking about expansion. Like, there's all this talk of things where the league is looking good. For them to go to the negotiation table and say, hey, hat in hand, we're poor, I don't know, you're kind of getting mixed messages there, don't you think?
Absolutely. It was the same thing the last time, right? I mean, Mark Cohen was commish. Everything is awesome. Everything is roses and rainbows and lollipops until they get to that table. And then it's, we're struggling, we're broke, we can't pay you, blah, blah, blah. So that's just the way it is in business. And I don't expect anything different the next time around. And I'm kind of disappointed that the commissioner would let this whole thing go through with the not giving out bonuses in the 2019 season, because I know that the players really like this new commission. That's not that's not a good look. You know, letting that go through, letting this happen is not a good look for him.
No, it's not. It's funny because everyone thought with Randy Ambrosi being a former player, maybe he'd be more apt to give the players a little extra because he was one of them. But at the end of the day, he's hired to do what the Board of Governors, a.k.a. the owners, want him to do. And owners don't want to give up their money. Players don't want to give it. Like, it's this, the CFL, to me, is not in a position where I think they can – I think they're in a better position now where if they did miss a few weeks of season, I don't think it would kill the league. But it's one of those things where the CFL can be very easily forgotten. And this goes to moving the season up. Can you, if the CFL, say, had a month-long strike in 2019 and they've decided to move the season up to the beginning of June, so we missed the first few weeks of the season as it coincides with the end of the NHL season in the Stanley Cup playoffs and the end of the NBA playoffs, like, no one's going to care. You're going to be, oh, the CFL's not there. I'll just watch hockey and basketball still. Like that. So, like, there's so many, like, kind of moving parts here. I just look at this memo and I hear these things and I just think that's a dirty tactic. These players are going to sign these contracts in good faith. You're going to sign them. So you're essentially telling, when I read this, what I'm hearing is any player that signs with an offseason bonus due in 2019, you're basically saying, yeah, we'll sign you this, but we're not giving, but we're not going to give you the money. So it's like, what do players do then? Does every player who signs this year only sign a 1-year deal? Like, because if you sign a contract that says you're going to get paid X amount of dollars in February of 2019 as a roster bonus or whatever it is, you've already basically been told you're not seeing that money. So what's the point of even signing on the dotted line for that?
Yeah, and I don't understand how they can sign contracts and then renege on them, essentially. I mean, we were talking about this before the podcast. Does that open up some litigation from the players against the owners, or I just don't see how that's legal.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either, because it's like, to prove collusion or anything like that, you have to have it like written. It's very hard to prove that they're colluding against you or whatever. But this would be like, it's out there. If there was a memo sent to the teams, there's literally a memo sent to the teams. Like, it's written down. So it'd be like the league would put itself in a really disadvantageous position by giving this notice out to all 9 teams, it seems just weird. Honestly, it seems really weird to me. It's like, I just don't understand what they gain from doing this, honestly. All they're going to do is piss off the players, and that's kind of the last thing you want to do when heading into a contract negotiation.
And, you know, piss off the fans, too, because it's just a bad look. Like, it makes them look like, you know, a corporation that doesn't give a crap about their employees. All they care about is the bottom dollar. And I'm sure that's the truth, really. I mean, any corporation doesn't give a about their employees. All they care about is making more money yearly. So to put that out into the public sphere is a bit of a dumb move by the CFL, in my mind.
Well, and it also means that we know who to squarely place the blame on when, like, this is all these lockouts. We've seen it in the NFL. They never lost a game. They lost one preseason game, but we saw it there. We've obviously seen in the NHL, the NBA, Major League Baseball. There's always this push and pull of some fans side with the owners. Hey, the owners pay all that money. They deserve to make it back. And some fans side with the players. And players are the ones putting their bodies on the line. They deserve to make the money. Personally, I pretty much always side with players. They're the ones that I pay to see who owns the team, how much money they make. Doesn't really make all – like, as long as they make enough money where they can pay for the team and maybe make a little, I don't fault them for that. But at the same time, I'm always going to side on the players. This coming out, well, in 2 years when they're in a legal fight or they're in a labor dispute and the players are looking for sympathy, they're going to get it, because we know that this all started with the league deciding to not pay them the money they were owed. So now we're going to sit here and we're going to know exactly what the impetus was for these guys going on strike. And it's going to be like, yeah, it sucks that we're not getting CFL football, but it's the owners that need to get their heads on straight, not necessarily the players.
Yep, the league threw the first stone in this for sure. And it's just too bad that, like, it's different in the NFL or the MLB or NHL hockey. I mean, those athletes are getting paid millions upon millions of dollars. The CFL, they are not getting that money. And there's just as much risk in the CFL as there is in the NFL. You do just as much risk to get injured in the CFL as the NFL. So there's a lot more sympathy for the players, I believe, in a league where you get paid the minimum around $60,000, something like that, than a league where the minimum is $600,000. So the owner really, I believe, shot themselves in the foot making this public and sending out these memos.
Yeah, it's obviously not this offseason we're worried about, it's next, but it's going to be something worth monitoring over the next 18 months to see whether or not in 2019 we're even going to have CFL football start at the right time. Mm. So it sucks, but it's the business side of sports that we have to always deal with. Okay, moving on. Nick Lewis, kind of out of nowhere, opened up a bit of a can of worms on Twitter by saying the CFL might be wise to revise the ratio rule in order to attract more revenue. His feelings essentially boiled down to that for players to get paid more, the fans would need to pay more, and to charge more, the product needs to be better, and he thinks a way to make that better is by having more Americans play. Now, a lot of people jumped down his throat over this. I sort of understand it, but there were some people that took it a little too far, bozos like our good friend Ricky Foley, making claims that Lewis essentially saying he hates Canadians, which isn't remotely what he said. And Foley even trotted out that stupid, well, you know what, if you don't like it, leave it. You know what I mean? I hate that talking point. Yeah, I absolutely hate that talking point. And then he brought up this, what he saw in the Grey Cup. It was a completely asinine comment where it was made to highlight all the stuff that Canadians did in that game. And it completely ignored all the things that American players – it was just completely stupid. Basically showed why Ricky Foley went to York instead of, like, a real school. Now, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about this, so I'm kind of curious. What did you feel about Lewis's comments?
I was not deeply offended by them. Obviously, I want Canadians playing in the Canadian Football League. But say if we were to get another team, I would not be hugely offended if they drop the ratio by two players. So it's five players on each team, because we saw the impact that the Red Blacks had when they came into the league. The play was kind of down. That might not have been because of the ratio, but it might have been too. So I'm not sure. But I would not be overly offended if they dropped the ratio by a couple players.
Yeah, see, I don't necessarily agree with everything Lewis said, but I don't entirely disagree with it either. I love seeing Canadians play. We were big Mike Jones supporters on this show for most of the season. We were pumping his tires. I don't think dropping the ratio, like the players, like kind of made a point. Like, I don't think it would be all that bad. Like Nick Lewis made a great point that there's some Canadians who get 8-year careers in the CFL and never even sniff getting a starting spot on offense or defense, whereas an American player who would be in the same position would be up here 2-3 years tops, and then he's out of a job. And that's I kind of understand where he's coming from there. And the big one to me in all this talk about we got to have Canadians in the CFL, and I love watching Canadians play, and this is a question I have for anyone out there who listens that ripped Nick Lewis and guys like Ricky Foley who did it too. I wonder, do you have season tickets to your local U Sports football team? Because if you really love watching Canadians play, if that's one of the most important aspects of the CFL to you, you'll find no greater place to see that than in the Canadian University Football Leagues across this country. Honestly, those teams are made up almost entirely of Canadians, and you can go out there and you can support Canadian University football, and you can see Canadians play Canadian football. And I went to two Vanier Cups, and the combined crowds for both those games wouldn't be a sellout at one Ticats game. So I think people, when they hear of change, they get this knee-jerk reaction that, oh, he's doing this because, well, Nick Lewis is American, so he hates Canada, and he hates Canadians, and he's spitting in the face of the league that made him money, and he's spitting in the face of the fans that paid to watch him play. And all that. And I just think it's this, it's like, just take a step back, read what he had to say, and look at it from a really rational viewpoint. He's not out of his mind. Like, no. I don't necessarily agree with him, but I don't entirely disagree with him either.
All the vitriol and all the hate that was tossed his way was unnecessary. He was just trying to have a conversation, you know, a logical, rational conversation. And of course, people can't do that. But the thing about, you know, making more revenue and a better product with American players, I think the product is pretty damn good right now. Maybe it could be better. But I don't think that bringing in American players would help create revenue. I think if they were name players, like if they're just American players that nobody knows and no one gives a shit. I mean, if they're top name players, then yeah, people will show up to watch them. But otherwise, I don't see how they create more revenue because there's more American players. But I do see the logic in, you know, the problem with Nick Lewis's problem is the best players aren't on the field necessarily. You know, there's Canadians playing that maybe shouldn't be starting just because of the ratio. Maybe there's an American linebacker that was way better than him than a Canadian linebacker, but isn't on the field because of the ratio. So I can see his point there. It would be nice to have the best players possible on the field, but you know, that's just the way it is. And I'm happy with the ratio the way it is right now. But looking down the future, if we get a 10th team, I would not have a problem with dropping one or two players from the ratio.
I completely 100% agree with you that I don't think adding more American players will necessarily make the product on the field better. Like, I don't know either way, but I'm not just going to sit here and say, oh, well, if you had American players, the CFL would automatically be a better league. So that's one of the points I disagree with Lewis on. Another one I disagree on, and I kind of disagree with you on a little bit here, Mike. The quality of Canadian players right now, I think, is better than ever. You've seen a round added to the draft in 2016, and that was after the league had added the Ottawa Red Blacks. And you brought up the point that there was a bit of a dip in 2015, but we've seen it kind of slightly tick up, and the ratio hasn't changed, and that added 20 more Canadian players to the talent pool, and it really hasn't overall, you're going to see dips every now and then when it comes, like, sometimes the league's not going to be as good as it was at other times, but I feel like we're trending upwards when it comes to games that are exciting, games that are good, games that are close. The league is, I think the teams for the most part are very evenly balanced. Like, I think the product is a fun one to watch, and we've seen that by adding an 8th team. Adding a ninth team, and adding all those extra Canadians. So over the long term, I think we've seen the play kind of rise back to where it was sort of pre-Red Blacks. So
right.
I could see a case where you say, hey, let's drop the ratio if we add a 10th team, because you're still adding 44 jobs, 50-some jobs. You're still going to add a bunch of Canadians. I could still see where that could be a starting point. But I think even if we saw a dip, even if we kept everything the same and we bring in Halifax and we see a dip to start, we've seen the level of play rise again. And I think we'd probably see that again in a few years when we add another team. And like I said, just look at the quality of Canadian players. We're seeing a much more emphasis on Canadian players playing in the NFL. We're seeing the top Canadian players go to big American schools. And like, for instance, Justin Senior, who was the number one rated Canadian player for the CFL draft, went to Mississippi State. That's a big time American school. Anthony Auclair, who went to Laval, has played in NFL games. Like, we're seeing the quality, the talent of Canadian players is as high as it's ever been before. So I think if we continue to keep the ratio the way it is, we might see a higher quality caliber of Canadian come into the league. You know what I mean?
I agree that the Canadian players are much better than what they get. We're at a top level right now of Canadian players, but you tell me that they're better than most Americans? I mean,
absolutely not.
Yeah. Like, yes, the Canadian talent is much, much better, but if you want the best players on the field, they're probably going to be Americans, right?
I would tend to agree with that, yes. Like, there's obviously going to be the exceptions. Like, I think Andy Fantuz, regardless of passport, is one of the best receivers playing in the CFL. I honestly believe that. That man.
Yeah, there's an American out there that's Andy Fantuz, like, that is better.
You think? You know? In the CFL right now. Do you think Andy Fantuz is only playing in the CFL because he's Canadian?
No, I will not say that. No.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying in general, like, if they wanted to find an American out there, you could find a white guy that's 6'3", that's big size, and maybe even a little faster, maybe catches the ball better. You know, I could see that. You know, you could find him. You could find him. There's so many American football players out there.
Well, I agree, but you know what? I think there's name me the best American receiver playing in the CFL, and I could say there's probably a guy out there who's not playing in the NFL either that's better than him. Like, there's probably a receiver out there better than Darrell Walker. There's probably a receiver out there better than Adarius Bowman, better than SJ Green. Like, there's the Americans produce so many players that guys fall through the cracks and never get a shot to play professional ball, who would be one of the greatest players ever if they got a chance, and they just don't. So,
well,
I think,
would they get the chance if they dropped the ratio?
Maybe they would. Maybe.
And I'm not saying either way. Like, I'm not saying I'm for dropping the ratio. But, you know, just for sake of argument, I mean, there probably is some players out there that are talented enough to play in the CFL, but aren't playing because they don't fit into the ratio, don't fit into that team because there's a Canadian playing there that they need.
Yeah, you're probably right. I can't argue that because, well, first off, it's a hypothetical, so we obviously can't argue it. But at the same time, we just don't know. I'm just saying the level of Canadian talent in the CFL, I think, is the best it's ever been, or the best it's been to my recollection. And I'm not against having a conversation about altering the ratio at all. I'm just saying this is something that I think, unfortunately, Nick Lewis did this on Twitter, which, you know, Twitter has the nuance of a bull in a china shop. So it's like you say anything on there and people are just going to attack you. But I think he started an interesting dialogue, and I've said it a couple times, and I'll say it again. I don't entirely agree with what he's saying, but I don't entirely disagree with it either. And I think he is someone who I've heard him speak. He's a smart guy. He thinks about things before he says it. And if you go and read what he actually said, it is very interesting, and it is an interesting take. I just don't think that – like the crux of his point is you want the players to get paid more. The fans will have to pay more. And to do that, more Americans need to play. I'm just not sure that is correct.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that for sure.
Okay, Mike, let's hop aboard the coaching carousel right now and play a new game that I am calling Big Deal, Little Deal, or No Deal at All. We're going to talk about all sort of coaching moves and player moves that we're going to do in a quick manner. We're going to start in Calgary, and Devon Claybrooks is staying with the Calgary Stampeders. He's taken his name out of the running for the Montreal Alouettes head coaching job and will remain with the Calgary Stampeders as their defensive coordinator for at least one more season. He was thought to be the front runner for the Alouettes job, so now they have to go back to the drawing board. Claybrooks clearly is going to be a head coach at some point in the future. Where it's going to be, who knows, but I think this is good for Calgary that they get their architect of the defense back, that defense that was the league's best last year. So, Mike, Claybrooks staying in Calgary and spurning Ottawa. Big deal, little deal, no deal at all. Did I say Ottawa? I meant Montreal.
It's a big deal. This guy has been the defensive coordinator for the Stampeders the last 2 years, and he's had a hell of a defense. To me, the defense carried the Stampeders all season long. They were the shining area on that team, and you know, I think they're the best by far in the league. Now, you could argue that with other teams, I'm sure, but to me, it's a very big deal to get this guy back with Calgary.
I think it's a big deal in both ways. I think it's a big deal that Calgary gets him back, and I think it's a big deal that he's burning the Alouettes, because now the Owls have to go back to the drawing board, and they're not getting their number one choice. So now who do they pick? I think it's obviously a big deal for Calgary if they get their guy back. They were the league's best defense last year in most statistical categories. I think this is a big deal in both scenarios. Moving on, Noel Thorpe is now the new defensive coordinator in Ottawa. Whew, Mike, big deal, little deal, no deal at all.
I think it's a big deal for Ottawa. They have snatched up a coach that has been one of the best coordinators in the league for years and years and years. So to get Noel Thorpe to improve that defense is a big deal for the Ottawa, I was about to say Renegades, Ottawa Red Blacks.
They didn't say Rough Riders.
Yeah, that's true. Just expect a lot of blitzing out of the Red Blacks next season. So big deal from this guy.
I think it's a big deal as well. This is a great, great hiring by the Red Blacks. Noel Thorpe rubs people the wrong way. Purdy's a bit of a jerk, but you know what? Look at those defenses in Montreal. They were outstanding. This is also a big deal, I think, for a couple other teams, Winnipeg and Edmonton in particular, because this is a guy, don't forget, Noel Thorpe tried to leave Montreal last year, or was it the year before? I think it was last year, and head to Edmonton as their defensive coordinator and was forced to stay because his Owls wouldn't let him out of his contract. And the Bombers, and Bombers fans in particular, have been clamoring for this guy to come and replace Richie Hall since Noel Thorpe was fired by Montreal midseason. So neither of those teams are going to get him, and Thorpe stays in the East. Red Blacks offense can be pretty darn explosive. You add a stingy defense to that, and Ottawa might have made one of the best moves of the offseason bringing him in as defensive coordinator.
I'm pretty sure I cut a promo on Noel Thorpe when I touched out Atlantic when Montreal and Hamilton played. I'm pretty sure he was at the bar and I was a little bit inebriated, and I did like a Razor Ramon, like we're gonna carve you up. I remember saying that to him. He wasn't very pleased. Surprised I didn't get a punch in the face, but yeah, huge deal for Ottawa to get him in there.
Oh my God! How have you never shared that story before?
I don't know, man. It just kind of popped into my head. I'm pretty sure it was him. I'm pretty sure it was Noel Thorpe. He was all decked out in Alouette's gear, and it looked like him. So I think I realized it, like, the next day. I'm like, did I cut a promo on him? But, yeah, I'm pretty sure that happened. So.
Oh, that is amazing. You could only come to Podski Wee Wee for stories like that. Okay, Mike, yes. last coaching stop. We're going to BC. The Lions let go of a foursome of coaches, offensive coordinator Kahari Jones, who's been their OC since 2014, special teams coordinator Marcelo Simmons, who held that position for the last two seasons, defensive line coach Robin Ross, and wide receiver coach Marcel Belfay, who Ticat fans will remember for his stint here as their head coach. They were all let go by the Lions, Mike. Big deal, little deal, no deal at all.
Little deal. Kahari Jones has underwhelmed as OC with the BC Lions, in my estimation. He came in 2014, and I remember seeing interviews with him saying, "We're gonna light it up. We're gonna be a high octane offense, and really rack up the points." And that just has not happened. Whether that's his fault, the player's fault, I'm not sure, but it does fall on him since he's the offensive coordinator. So, and the other positional coaches, I'm a fan of Marcel Belfay. Obviously, I liked his time that he spent in Hamilton, but I think those guys can be replaced pretty easily in those smaller roles.
Yeah, I think it's a little deal as well. I think it's mostly not that they lost these guys, but who are they going to get to replace them, especially Jones? Because whoever they bring in to replace Jones as offensive coordinator, his number one priority is going to be to fix Jonathan Jennings. He went from a guy that not just ourselves, but a lot of people were touting as an MOP candidate. BC was a Grey Cup favorite to start the season. And they really underperformed. They really underwhelmed. They missed the playoffs for the first time in 20-something years. So it'll be whomever takes that position, it'll be their job to get Jennings fixed, maybe build an offensive line around him, maybe give him some protection so he can make those deep throws that he loves to throw. But, yeah, it's a little deal because these are some named coaches. Hey, and for all we know, maybe a guy like Belfay or Jones could end up as the head coach in Montreal. And this could be sort of their – I don't think Jones has done enough as an OC, both in BC, and let's not forget he was the OC in Hamilton for a stretch as well. I'm not sure he's really proven enough that he deserves to be head coach, but I wouldn't be surprised if Belfay popped up as a possible candidate in Montreal, French-Canadian, speaks the language. I think, but then do they want to tread down that water like they did with Jacques Chaptelain? I don't know, but yeah, it's definitely just a little deal, not anything huge, but it'll be interesting to me to see who replaces Jones out of those four guys. Okay, last one, Mike. Manny Arsenault has re-signed with the BC Lions for one more year. Big deal, little deal, no deal at all.
I think it's a big deal, adding him back into this receiving corps of the BC Lions adds another element. You know, they got the speed. They got Burnham there. They got Chris Williams there. Now Arsenault comes back. He's a size guy. He makes all the catches. He's just a tremendous player. Been a BC Lion his whole career in the CFL. So I think it's a big deal to get him back with the BC Lions. He's a big star out there in BC for Lions fans, and I'm sure they're very pleased to have him back.
This one's tough for me because Manny Arsenault is a great player, so in that way it feels like a big deal. But in reading some stuff, it seemed like there was never really any doubt that he was going back to BC. So in that case, it feels kind of like no deal at all because he was never going to leave. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's great that they get him back, but there was never really concern that he was going to go. So maybe I guess I'll say little deal, combine the two and take the middle road there and say it's a little deal because it's great to have him back, but there was never any concern that he was going to go elsewhere. So it kind of sucks because you and I sat here, what was it, last episode, I think, and we said, hey, man, wouldn't it be great to have Manny Arsenault in Hamilton? And I guess that was wishful thinking.
It's tough to sign away those big stars from their teams, unless they're unhappy with their teams. But in his situation, he's been in BC for so long. He's a fan favorite. It only made sense for him to come back.
Yeah, he feels like a Lions lifer. And that's good for the fans out there in BC to get a guy to attach onto. And there's few guys as entertaining and probably as good in the community as Manny Arsenault. So he's staying in BC. And we're going to move on to the last bit of news to talk about this week. We are going to have a new head of officiating. Glenn Johnson, who spent the last 4 years as the CFL's VP of football, is stepping down. And then in reading about him stepping down, I found out he was the guy that spearheaded the movement to make those judgment calls like pass interference subject to review. So we're going to get some new blood here in the league offices when it comes to officiating. No idea who that might be. But I think this is kind of a good thing, don't you? We're going to maybe get some new ideas and some new ways of looking at things, and maybe some of the problems we've had with both officiating and especially with the command center could get fixed with a new guy in charge.
Well, hopefully, it does. I am a little concerned about it because a guy like Glenn Johnson, who's had so much experience in the league, you know, if he can't do a great job with the reviews and all that stuff, if you're bringing a new guy who doesn't have as much experience as him, you know, what kind of job is he going to do? You know, it could be for the worse, but it's so hard to tell what's going to happen with that. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I'm sure a lot of people are happy, but I'm not, you know, jumping for joy or anything.
Oh, no. Like, he left on his own terms, so good for him. And like I said, maybe some fresh blood could bring some interesting innovations. But you do make a very good point in that he did have a ton of experience and wasn't able to fix those issues we had. And to be honest with you, I think over his tenure, I think review might have even gotten worse. But I think some of that falls on the coaches and the competition committee because they pushed for these things, these pass interference and illegal contact. That was we want to place the blame on officials and replay, but it was the coaches who wanted that stuff to be reviewable. So they get some fault in this as well. But it would be nice to see. I'm curious, and I'm sure we'll talk about it when it happens, who they replace Johnson with as senior VP of football in the league office. So it'll be something worth watching because I believe it was Tom Higgins who was the what they call the head ref, essentially, before Johnson was. So it'll be kind of interesting. Higgins was not a former referee. Johnson was. So who knows? They could go anywhere with this. It'll be interesting to follow who they hire after this is all said and done.
Yeah, do you think it'll be like a current referee, like a guy that's been ref for a long time and he steps up?
Maybe an Andre Pirul?
Yes, that's what I was thinking. Imagine the outrage if that happens.
Oh, my God.
I think we both agree that he gets way too much hatred thrown his way.
Absolutely.
He's probably the best. His crew is probably the best in the league, and they're the Grey Cup refs pretty much every year. So they score out the best, and he's not, you know, he's just the one making the calls. He's the one announcing to the crowd. So the messenger gets on. So he gets shit on way too much.
Over the last few years, I've really come to like Andre Pirul as a ref. But ever since that Ticats game where they played the Owls and he got run into by a player on Montreal, I think it was the last game of the 2016 season. And he made the, like, it, to me, like, it, that's so endearing. And that's so CFL where it's like, no, it's okay. My bad. Like, it was an accident. It happens. It's not a big deal. Like, that, it just felt so down home and charming, kind of, that from then on, how can you look at that guy and be anything but, like, you know what? He'd probably be a really interesting guy to have a beer with and have a chat with, to be perfect. He seems like someone who would be a lot of fun to be around. So I've liked him for many years on the field. I used to hate the guy, and then I sort of came around and was like, I was wrong about him. He is really good at his job. I would like to have a talk with him one day.
French. Yes.
I completely, partially because he's French. 100% believe that is the reason why most people have a problem, because he says things funny.
Yeah, it's a kind of a childish reaction, you know? Like, oh, he says turd down. Like, who gives a crap? Like, he's French. Come on. Like, that's just the way. It's stupid.
That's stupid. What a great way to end the show. I think it's safe to say this will probably be the last one of 2017. Christmas is but 2 weeks away, and unless something major happens over the next week, I don't think you and I are going to sit down on Christmas Day and record a podcast, so I think we can officially say we have shut down Podski Wee Wee for 2017.
We might take advantage of it, you know. Might take advantage. You know, the NBA, they have a game on Christmas Day. No one else does it. We should have a podcast, live podcast on Christmas Day. We'd probably have tons of viewers.
Oh, I'm sure we wouldn't. But anyway, don't forget, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts as well as Google Play and Stitcher, or you can go to 3Down Nation and find it there as well. And don't be shy. Hit us up on the social media platforms. Remember, we have our own show, Twitter, and Instagram account. We are at PodskiWeeWee on both, so you can find us there, interact with us there. We're kind of getting the hang of things with that. We're still working out the kinks, I think, a little bit, but there's been some pretty good content on there since we launched that, so you can find us there. And, of course, you can always find us at our own personal accounts. Hit us up with questions, comments, whatever. Mike, let them know where they can find you specifically, please.
Mike_Ticats.
And I am JoshSmith_82. And feel free to continue throwing those comments and questions our way in the 3Down Nation comment section. We love reading them. So, Mike, that was episode 97 of Podscreen. We're closely approaching that big 100. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.